Today is Friday, December the 10th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington. Thank you for joining us. Coming up in the next half hour, the United States launches a virtual summit for democracy, hosting more than 100 world leaders, civil society activists, and journalists in what it says is the largest gathering of its kind ever held.
In my view, this is the defining challenge of our time. Democracy, government of the people, by the people, for the people, can at times be fragile, but it also is inherently resilient.
New York's Attorney General wants former President Donald Trump to testify in a civil probe of his business practices. In Eastern Belarus, more than 1,000 people, many of them young children, are living in a makeshift refugee camp amid freezing temperatures, a humanitarian crisis that critics say is political.
I had very bad feelings and I feel sad because I crossed so many things, bad things in the jungle. But we will stay here till Poland will open the border.
And the World Bank says that it has withdrawn its support for a population and housing census in Sierra Leone just days before it was due to begin. We'll have these stories and more coming up right here on International Edition. Stay tuned. And for our top story, the United States launched a virtual summit for democracy on Thursday, hosting more than 100 world leaders, civil society activists, and journalists in what it says is the largest gathering of its kind ever held. As VOA's senior diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain reports, the State Department says America is approaching the global attack on democracy with humility and confidence.
The hours-long seizure of the U.S. Capitol on January 6th by supporters of Donald Trump, seeking to overturn his electoral defeat, shook many around the world, including incoming President Joe Biden. That attack is part of what moved Biden to host a major summit for democracy, says U.S. Undersecretary of State for Civilian Security, Democracy, and Human Rights, Usra Zaya. Usra Zaya is the Undersecretary for Civilian Security, Democracy, and Human Rights. She spoke to reporters from the State Department.
We approach this week with both humility and confidence. Humility in that we want to listen and learn and don't shy away from our shortcomings. Confidence in our constant striving for a more perfect union and our certainty that working together, democracies can and will deliver for the world's citizens, regardless of the raw deal that autocrats and authoritarians try to sell.
The January 6th insurrection left its mark and is influencing how other countries behave on the world stage, according to Brian Koutoulis of the Middle East Institute.
I hear more of a posture from countries, friends, adversaries, competitors alike, that many of them are going to be hedging against the United States, meaning they're not going to be all in necessarily, in part because they see the world's changing, but then to a large degree, they worry about a pendulum swing in the United States, meaning, you know, they saw things shift substantially from President Obama to President Trump, and now it's shifting in a different direction under President Biden.
The struggle between the world's democracies and authoritarian governments has been a central focus of the Biden administration's foreign policy, with crises in Myanmar, Haiti, and Sudan, among many other places. Authoritarian leaders of countries like Russia and China are not invited to the summit. Russia and China have criticized the summit itself as anti-democratic and divisive. On a recent visit to Kenya, Secretary of State Antony Blinken described what he called a worrying democracy recession on the African continent and around the world.
Democracy is falling back. It's being tested, democracy, in all sorts of ways, from inside and from outside. And we've seen citizens' trust in democracy decrease. We've seen bad actors play up some of the divisions that exist within democracies, independent institutions challenged and undermined, journalists, human rights activists threatened and attacked.
Biden envisions the summit as kicking off a year of action promoting democracy, fighting corruption and extremism, and protecting detained and threatened journalists and human rights activists around the world. Cindy Sain, VOA News.
The summit on democracy comes at a time when many in the world are worried that America's democracy is facing a historic crisis of its own. In his opening remarks at the summit, President Joe Biden acknowledged that the stakes were high, calling it the defining challenge of the current era. Biden warned that globally, freedoms were under threat from autocrats seeking to expand power, export influence, and justify repression. He called on the attendees to support and safeguard rights and freedoms of their people in the face of this rising authoritarianism.
Democracies are not all the same. We don't agree on everything, all of us in this meeting today. But the choices we make together are going to define, in my view, the course of our shared future for generations to come. And as a global community for democracy, we have to stand up for the values that unite us. We have to stand for justice and the rule of law, for free speech, free assembly, a free press, freedom of religion, for all the inherent human rights of every individual.
Yeah, President Biden speaking at the opening of the Virtual Summit for Democracy. Erica Franz is a professor in political science at Michigan State University. She's the author of numerous books and published studies on authoritarian politics with a focus on democratization, conflict, and development. She tells me that the summit is a test of Biden's administration's commitment and ability to inspire confidence in the world that is still grappling with a global pandemic, and one in which many autocratic governments have used as an excuse to step up repressive measures and impose new restrictions on civil liberties.
Professor Franz, thank you very much for joining us today here on International Edition. A new report says that a number of countries are undergoing what they called a democratic backsliding. You know, countries including some regional super, you know, powers, economic powers, countries like Brazil, India, and many others. My question to you, how much of this backsliding globally has to do with the U.S.'s own backsliding?
That's a good question. First of all, thanks for having me on the show. I appreciate the opportunity. So as you point out, yes, we are amid a pretty prolonged session of democratic backsliding globally, where, you know, Freedom House, for example, has documented more than 15 consecutive years of losses in freedom globally, as opposed to increases or improvements. And in some cases, these episodes are happening in countries that are already, well, not the backsliding, but the reversions of freedom are happening in places that are already authoritarian. But in many places like the U.S. or Brazil or India, we're seeing these democracies that were once robust edging towards authoritarianism. And what is somewhat troubling is that many of these places don't really fit the mold for where we're used to seeing democratic challenges. So usually the countries that are most at risk of backsliding are have a shorter history of democracy or lower levels of wealth. But the U.S. clearly doesn't fit that mold. And in terms of the U.S.'s foreign policy vision of trying to promote democracy worldwide, it doesn't really help the U.S. sell its message when it's currently experiencing so many domestic challenges in terms of maintaining its own democracy. So it's not so much that other countries are necessarily mimicking the what's happening in the U.S. intentionally, but rather we're kind of losing our own legitimacy in terms of democracy promotion.
So now that the Biden administration is putting this issue, as they say, on the front burner in terms of the global conversation, how does it explain its own backsliding to the world? How do they start that conversation?
Yeah, this is going to be very tricky because on the one hand, the backsliding that occurred happened under the Trump administration. So it wasn't until about 2016 when Trump got on the campaign trail that we started to have worries about what would happen to the American democracy should Trump get elected. And then sure enough, when he did come to power, he did a number of things that were troubling, mainly in terms of trying to consolidate control in the executive, put loyalists in positions of influence instead of experts, and then generate questions about the integrity of our elections. So all those things happened before Biden assumed power. Yet, you know, we still need to somehow reconcile what happened with what our own vision of democracy is. And given that there's been very little consequences from the January 6th insurrection in terms of the perpetrators basically going free at the top levels, you know, it's kind of difficult to state that we really value democracy when those sorts of episodes of violence go unpunished. On top of this, we're seeing challenges to electoral integrity via gerrymandering and restrictions on the right to vote. I have a data set on democracies, and we code a country as democratic if all those who are eligible can vote easily. And these challenges over access to voting, making it more difficult to vote or barring certain groups from voting, really threaten the integrity of the democracy in the U.S.
You know, we've been in a pandemic, in a global COVID-19 pandemic since March of 2020. Analysts say that the pandemic has been used by authoritarian regimes to consolidate control of their countries and their societies. My question to you is, has the pandemic provided a gateway to this backsliding and increasing authoritarianism that we see around the world?
That's a great question. So the relationship so far seems to be somewhat nuanced. At the start of the pandemic, there were a lot of fears that countries that were democratic countries that were somewhat on the fringe would see backsliding. Places like the U.S., for example, would the Trump administration have used that as an opportunity to restrict freedoms? So there were a lot of concerns about that. But what we saw happening in the end was that the countries that were democratic did not necessarily backslide because of the pandemic. The countries that were authoritarian, however, we did see reversions towards more entrenched authoritarianism. Places like Hungary are a really good example. So the Hungarian regime was autocratic by my own assessment prior to the pandemic. But things got even worse during the pandemic because the leadership was able to use it as an opportunity to restrict freedoms of opponents. So it more so led to an entrenchment of authoritarianism rather than leading democracies to collapse or backslide further.
Erica Franz is a professor in political science at Michigan State University. We'll bring you the second part of our conversation next week. This is International Edition on the Voice of America. New York's Attorney General wants former President Donald Trump to testify in a civil probe of his business practices. AP's Washington correspondent Saga Megani reports.
Letitia James is looking into whether the Trump Organization misled banks or tax officials about the value of the ex-president's assets. A person familiar with the matter says her office has now asked that Trump appear for a deposition next month. That could eventually lead to issuing a subpoena if he refuses. The Manhattan District Attorney's Office is conducting a criminal probe of Trump's business dealings, separate from the one led by James, who today suspended her campaign for New York governor, saying she will instead seek another term as Attorney General. Sagar Magani, Washington.
And in some good news, jobless claims in the U.S. have dropped to a 53-year low. AP's correspondent Mike Hampen reports.
It's more evidence the U.S. is recovering from last year's coronavirus recession. The Labor Department says unemployment claims dropped by 43,000 last week to 184,000, the lowest since September 1968. Economist Stephen Stanley says seasonal volatility likely played a role as the numbers were adjusted to reflect job market fluctuations. Before the adjustments, claims rose by almost 64,000. Just under 2 million Americans were collecting traditional unemployment benefits the week that ended November 27th. Mike Hemp in Washington.
This is VOA's International Edition. I'm Jackson Vunganyi. More than 1,000 people, many of them young children, are living in a makeshift refugee camp amid freezing temperatures in eastern Belarus. It's a humanitarian crisis that critics say is political. European nations accuse the disputed President Alexander Lukashenko of using migrants as a weapon against Poland. For VOA, Jamie Detmer narrates this report from Ricardo Makina in Belarus.
with outdoor temperatures as low as 16 degrees below zero, more than 1,000 migrants have been trapped in this logistics centre set up by the Belarusian authorities after Poland used security forces to stop their passage to the European Union. Most of these migrants come from Kurdistan, lured by the promise of being able to cross the border into Poland easily. Among them are many families and young children. Now trapped in Belarus, they feel they are victims of geopolitical tensions that, they say, are alien to them. What they want is a better life in Europe, says Fahad Mohammed, a Kurd from Iraq.
It is true that there are problems between Belarus and Poland, but that is a political issue. Here are human beings who need the European Union.
Most of the migrants interviewed want to go to Germany, others to France or Spain. None want to stay in Poland. All say they want to escape from situations of poverty and violence. Dumbia Ushina says that is why he left the Democratic Republic of Congo.
We only ask that they let us pass because on the other side there is a better life and human rights, because in our countries human rights are not respected.
Western countries accuse Belarusian President Alexander Lukashenko of orchestrating this crisis to damage stability and the EU's image, especially after Poland used police forces to respond to the influx. Migrants who have tried entering Poland and been forced back say that despite the violence they have suffered, they are willing to try to cross the border again through a forested area they now dub the jungle. Bahash Zatwan is a migrant from the Kurdish region of Iraq.
I had very bad feelings and I feel sad because I crossed so many things, bad things in the jungle. It was very bad for me in the jungle. We all got sick. We all got infected by the gas and pepper. It was very bad. But we will stay here till Poland will open the border.
The threat of being expelled from Belarus looms over them. While Belarus has promised support for these migrants, deportations have already begun. For Fahad Mohammed from Iraq, none of the options are good.
Soldiers came, took passports by force, and took people to the airport to send them to their countries. It is catastrophic. Also, there is not much here. Little food, no access to electricity to charge our phones. There are few toilets, and they are disgusting.
The migrants get three meals a day from the Red Cross and the army, which also ensures that no one escapes from the camp's perimeter. Dmitry Vyestov, Secretary General of the Belarusian Red Cross Society, spoke to VOA.
All basic needs are covered. People could live here for a long time. Another question is whether they want to or not.
The migrants agree that what they have here is better, in any case, than life in the forest. They're waiting to get through the border of the European Union by any means possible, an undertaking that, in these temperatures, could mean death. For Ricardo Makina in Grodny, Belarus, Jamie Detmer, VOA News.
And Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan has until now been able to maintain good relations with his Ukrainian and Russian counterparts. But now analysts warn that escalating tensions between Russia and Ukraine could mark the end of that balancing act. Dorian Jones reports from Istanbul.
As tensions rise between Ukraine and Russia, Turkey is caught in the middle. Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan has cultivated close ties with both his Ukrainian and Russian counterparts. Mustafa Aydin teaches international relations at Turkey's Kadir Has University.
Turkey has developed a quite close relationship with Russia in different localities and neighborhoods of Turkey. But Ukraine has always been, since its independence, one of Turkey's closer friends and allies, in fact. If there is a conflict there, Turkey would be in a very hard position not to take sides.
Touting his good relations, Erdogan is offering to mediate between Kiev and Moscow, a move welcomed by Kiev. But a Russian foreign ministry spokesperson dismissed the offer. Some analysts say Moscow will be wary of damaging its close ties with Ankara. They say Russia values those ties, given that Turkey is a member of NATO.
For Russia, it's a priority to deepen cleavages within of the NATO community. Turkey is very important for Russia, and deepening its contacts with Ankara, Russia deepens cleavages within of NATO.
But Moscow's patience with Ankara could be wearing thin. Turkey's recent decision to let a U.S. warship use Istanbul's Bosphorus waterway to participate in a NATO-Ukrainian naval exercise in April drew swift condemnation from Russian President Vladimir Putin. Turkey's continued sale of military drones to Ukraine, which Kiev used recently against Russian-backed separatist forces, drew further criticism from Moscow. Arda Mevlutoglu is an independent defense analyst.
Russia would like to see the breakup of Turkey from NATO in this conflict. Therefore, the existence of Turkish support to Ukraine itself would be a key concern for Russian decision makers.
Turkey is heavily dependent on Russian energy and cooperation in hotspots, including Syria. Ankara is thus aware that Moscow could extract a heavy price if Ankara sides with its NATO partners in a conflict over Ukraine. Dorian Jones, VOA News, Istanbul.
And in other news, the World Bank says that it has withdrawn its support for a population and housing census in Sierra Leone just days before it was due to begin. Sierra Leone's President Julius Maada Bio last week announced that the National Statistics Office would launch a two-week midterm census on December the 10th to correct anomalies from the last count in 2015, which the previous administration used to justify creating additional districts in its strongholds. The World Bank says that the funds could still be released if certain conditions were met ahead of the exercise, including ensuring that those conducting the census were adequately trained. And for more on this story and other breaking news, visit our website at voanews.com. And while there, check out our other programs, Upfront Show, Africa 54 TV Show, Straight Talk Africa, and many others. And remember to connect with us on social media. We are on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, and on YouTube, where you can watch our videos. Just search for VOA Africa. You're listening to VOA's International Edition. I'm Jackson Vunganyi. Health officials in the United States, Israel, and other nations have for months been pushing for COVID-19 booster shots among older populations, and those calls are now growing worldwide. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA on the outcome of an extraordinary meeting at World Health Organization in Geneva, convened by SEG, the 15-member strategic advisory group of experts on vaccination.
Current data show that vaccines against COVID-19 provide a robust level of protection against severe forms of disease. However, emerging evidence indicates vaccines begin to lose their effectiveness about 6 months after they have been administered. This puts older adults and people with underlying conditions at particular risk. Chair of SAGE Alejandro Cravioto says the group of experts agrees a booster shot would provide a greater level of protection for people at risk. However, he notes vaccines are in short supply in many parts of the world. He says the wide administration of booster doses risks exacerbating inequities in vaccine access. He notes most current infections are among unvaccinated people, the majority of whom live in poor, developing countries. He says SAGE believes they should receive these life-saving vaccines instead of providing further doses to people who already are fully inoculated against the coronavirus.
For the time being, we continue to support, one, the need for equity in the distribution allocation of vaccines, and two, the use of third doses only on those that we have previously recommended, those that have received inactivated vaccines and those that are immunocompromised, which are the two groups that we feel should be protected further by a third dose of the primary process.
Cravioto says the meeting also discussed the feasibility of mixing and matching different vaccines, such as those developed by Pfizer and Moderna, to achieve full immunity against COVID.
So WHO supports a flexible approach to homologous or a single platform versus a heterologous mix and match schedules. We still believe that the best approach is to use the same vaccine for the two primary doses.
For national immunization programs, however, he says a different vaccine can be used for an additional third dose. This if the vaccine used for the two primary shots is in short supply and unavailable. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
South Africa recorded more than 20,000 new coronavirus cases Wednesday, nearly double the number from 1 week earlier. The government is making a renewed push for people to get vaccinated, but so far is avoiding new lockdown measures in an effort to protect the economy. Linda Gaftash reports from Johannesburg.
Coronavirus cases are rising dramatically in South Africa, with over 113,000 people currently infected. Experts say the Omicron variant discovered in South Africa last month is most likely driving the latest wave. But Minister in the Presidency, Mondle Gugubele, told reporters today that the government is trying to avoid stricter lockdown measures.
The damage the restriction caused last year, level 5 and so on, thousands of business that stopped, a number of jobs that have been lost. The attitude the government is adopting is find the best possible way of navigating whilst ensuring that the economy moves.
The South African government is championing vaccinations in order to protect more people from severe illness. The efforts appear to be working, with more than 133,000 people receiving a shot Wednesday. It means 43% of adults have at least had one dose. Gungubele says vaccinations are key to protecting lives as the government tries to protect both public health and the economy.
You need to find a balance between the livelihood and lives, because these are two sides of the same coin. And that coin is life. When one of them collapse, the life collapse.
Still, hospitalizations are increasing, with over 300 people admitted Wednesday. Minister Gungubele says the government is closely monitoring admissions to ensure facilities don't end up overwhelmed.
So far, the reports we're getting is that there is no red flag in that.
36 people died Wednesday of the coronavirus, bringing the country's death toll to over 90,000. South African health officials are expected to release more information on their findings about the current wave and the Omicron variant on Friday. Linda Giftash for VOA News, Johannesburg.
This has been International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of the entire production team, thank you so much for listening. Visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours a day at voanews.com. Until next time, I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington, wishing you a great weekend ahead.
Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
They're still trying to figure out what are the specific policies from the White House.
VOA Asia, your daily digest of top Asia stories.
Beijing has especially hazardous levels of air pollution.
Blending American and Asian perspectives.
China is protecting wildlife.
Original reports and series. Education, health, technology. Stories that mean something to your daily life. VOA Asia.
The voice of
of America. Washington, ba 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 zip.